Thanks, Kristen. Good morning, Oaks. And happy Father's Day to the dads in the room. Just a word of encouragement, brothers, to stay in there. We're doing the best we can, aren't we? And I don't think we can be asked to do more than that. but it's also a word of peace, I hope, to those for whom today is painful. For a variety of reasons, you're loved and seen here. A few years ago, a new interest started to develop for me in watching nature documentaries. And at the time, we were subscribers to Discovery Plus, and so I was like the king of the world. In those days, you know, I was, you know, on voyages over and through the sea and in the mountains and caves of the earth, and these fantastic British voices to guide me there. But I remember in those days, one stands out in particular that was of the lowest quality of anything I saw. It was obviously very low budget, and yet was of some of the most fascinating content, and it was about mushrooms. And according to the documentary, in like the 60s or 70s, science around mushrooms kind of stopped because it was kind of stigmatized because everyone was getting high on them all the time. But in the years since, that's either tapered off or we're cool with it because the science has kind of kicked back in. And what they're finding is extraordinary. And it's kind of pressing against the boundaries of how we've previously understood the natural world to operate. Because mushrooms are kind of in this category all their own. They're almost mysteriously semi-sentient or something. Like, they're not animals, we know that, but they're also kind of more than plants, somewhere in between. They're finding that mushrooms are the means by which trees are able to communicate with each other in the forest. They can also be astonishingly massive. Did you know that the largest organism to have ever been recorded on Earth is not the blue whale or those giant trees in Utah? It is a fungal body discovered in 1998 in the woods of Oregon, an Armillaria ostei that is nearly 4 square miles in size. One organism. But even in the more ordinary, there's some mind-blowing stuff. Because the mushrooms that like you see in your yard are not like the weeds you see in your yard, where if you were to kind of just like scoop under them and just kind of get their roots, like you'd have the whole thing there. Instead, mushrooms are the fruiting bodies of this extraordinary subterranean life. And these ordinary things that we step over and mow over and stuff are so much more than they appear. They are experiencing life with a depth and mystery that we can scarcely comprehend. And there's not a person in this room who does not want to experience life like that. We don't want to just exist. We want to draw from something that comes from so much deeper and richer places. And part of what Jesus is doing in the world is offering such a life. But it comes from surprising places. This is the fourth and final week of our series through this church's values called The Life We're Learning. So this isn't the life we've mastered or achieved, but rather is one that we have faith that Christ holds and holds out for us and invites us to gradually lean into. In the past 3 weeks, Pastor Matt has walked us through rest and reflection and renewal. And this morning, we're going to be talking about roots, a life-giving anchoring in a community of people. And to explore that, we're going to ponder together Jesus' words in John 13. I'd invite you to turn there. If you like John 13, we're going to be in the brief passage, verses 34 and 35. John 13, 34 and 35. We'll have this on the screen for you. This is in the upper room. Jesus is on the cusp of his deepest sufferings in the world and has gathered his disciples together for an extended conversation. And he says this to them, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." What does it mean to love another person? This is one of those questions and concepts where we assume familiarity and comprehension, but when we're pressed to define it, we find that it can't be reduced, can't be contained by a few short words. But in light of this sermon series and this value of being rooted, I want us to consider Jesus' invitation here primarily as an invitation out of isolation and into love and rootedness, but out of isolation. And before we take any further steps into the thick of our discussion, I think it's worth noting a couple things that we're not talking about this morning. For one, we're not talking about skirting over deep wounds or even abuses that we've experienced. We're also not talking about ignoring our pain or problems that we experience in our relationships out of some bogus sense of spirituality. We're not talking about falsely equating loving people with a kind of inordinate or uncalled for entrusting of ourselves to people. And here's an important one. We're not talking about the moralizing of loneliness. And if loneliness is a large and painful part of your story and these are all your days, I want you to hear me say from the outset that that doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong. Tim Keller once said, "We do not have all the friends our hearts need." And I love that because it helps us see that this is simply part of the human experience. And it's very true that some of us experience loneliness more acutely than others do, but the longing that we have to be more surrounded and more adequately and sufficiently loved is not just something that some of us wrestle with. That is part of humanity's collective longing for Christ to make all things new in the resurrection. So what we are here to talk about instead is a certain level of agency that each of us does have to lean into the cultivation of love and rootedness with and among the people around us. It may come more naturally to some of us than others, but that's okay. Because as we've said, we're part of a body that is learning this life together. So, three kind of key features of rootedness I think we can draw from Jesus' words. The first is this, that rootedness is counterintuitive. Rootedness is counterintuitive. Jesus said, "Love one another just as I have loved you. You are also to love one another." Now, there were no gasps when I read that passage. We all know that to love one another is a good thing, and yet the very fact that Jesus has to issue this invitation at all tells us something important. That rootedness in a community does not come naturally to us as people. If we live for any length of time among people, we are sure to get a thorough and in some ways credible list of reasons why we should not get too close to others. Some of them are trivial annoyances. Maybe someone's too loud or they cough too much or something. But maybe it stings a little more than that. Like there are some truly careless words thrown around out there, aren't there? And then there's this whole other level that we've brushed on briefly, that some of us have experienced real, deep, life-altering woundedness from each other. And the crazy part about Jesus' words is that he is naive to none of that. No one had more reasons than Jesus to lean away from people. Unlike us, Jesus cannot be fooled by people's falseness or duplicity or projections or anything. He knows people through and through, sees them all the way down, the stuff that we can't, and still he calls us into love. Jesus was betrayed in the most brutal manner possible. It's worth noting that just 3 verses before our passage for this morning, Jesus himself dismissed Judas from the room to betray Jesus to his executioners. The shuffle of his footsteps hasn't even died away outside the door before Jesus turns to those who remain and says to them, "Love one another." How are we supposed to take this seriously then? And for one, I think it can help us to remember that really all true wisdom is counterintuitive. If it wasn't, everyone would be wise. There'd be no need for invitations like this because they'd be obvious to us and we'd all already be doing it. So we should expect on some level that whatever Jesus has for us in the way of wisdom and good life will grate against something in us, but it also has to ring true. And I think it does because there's not a one of us who has not felt surrendered to and suffered from the tug into isolation. We've all felt it. In this age, more than ever, I think, right? Jesus spoke these words long before society became such a transient place. Long before we had the option to uproot and change cities and change schools and change neighborhoods and change churches and change our circle of friends on a whim. He said this a long time before media and technology developed into this kind of personalized, handheld retreat that's ever present and available to us. Long before COVID, long before we kind of fell into what some have called a loneliness epidemic. And really, it's not any easier inside the church, is it? It's just as easy here as it is anywhere else to slip in quietly and slip out just as quietly. It's just as easy here to be in the same room with people year after year without knowing them any better or without ourselves being known any better, to remain hesitant, to take the risk of offering ourselves up. And yet, we crave connection, don't we? Across the board, we know we need it. So why do we tend to lean out instead of leaning in as Jesus calls us to? I wonder if any of these little scenarios are familiar to you. Have you ever typed out a text, maybe like a word of encouragement to someone or an invitation to get together, and then second-guessed it and just deleted it instead? Or have you ever had neighbors or people kind of in the corners of your life who for months or even years you've continually thought, I really should ask them to coffee sometime, but just never actually done it? Have you ever actually opened up your mouth and raised your hand to greet another person and then just kind of shrunk back for reasons you couldn't quite explain? or known that a loving but difficult conversation needs to happen and kicked the can down the road time and time and time again? Our problem isn't that we hate each other. Instead, I think that the problem is that when we have an opportunity to love someone, to root just a little bit deeper in a relationship, there's some part of us that almost steps out in front of our efforts and says, "Don't do this." Why do we do that? Like, what's happening in moments like that? And at the risk of generalizing, I think the best answer I can come up with is we're trying to protect ourselves. Like we said, we've all got reasons why we're certain Jesus' words can't really be trusted. Like, that conversation could be a really awkward one. That coffee appointment could be a total waste of time. That vulnerability might not be well received. And that voice in us can be so convincing. And I think that part of our work as a community, seeking, wanting to root a little deeper and love one another, is to get in conversation with that part of ourselves. What is it that I actually fear I'm going to lose? Is this actually as much of a risk as I'm convinced it is? And maybe there are real answers to those questions for you. And that's something to process with Jesus, with someone you trust. But I think that this is often one of those anxieties in us that thrives off of not being challenged. And friends, I understand more than you know, more than I can say, how convincing the temptation to lean away from other people can be, because that tempter in us has a point. Isolation can keep you temporarily safe. But what Jesus says is that only roots can keep you alive. Which brings us to our second point, that rootedness is not only counterintuitive, it is organic. Rootedness is organic. Now, by organic, I certainly don't mean that it just comes naturally and requires no effort or intention. Quite the opposite. What I mean is that true Christian community grows and functions like living things do. And while living things are vital and beautiful, the means by which they grow are not simple or clean. So while Jesus and the scriptures will sanctify and beautify human relationships, they will never romanticize them. Jesus says, "Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another." Which begs the question, how did Jesus love them then? And while it's true that Jesus had not yet gone to the cross in this conversation, it's clear that these words and the words that surround them are written and left for us in such a way that we understand these words to be spoken in the shadow of the cross. That the love of Christ, and therefore love among Christ's followers, is always a cross-shaped, cross-affected love, always, which means that often the deepest experiences of loving other people are in many ways experiences of death. We die to our own preferences, we die to convenience, we die to that felt safety of isolation that we've been talking about. It's even more than that. It's the discomfort of conflict, of being in proximity to backgrounds and opinions and perspectives that are different from your own. It's hard conversations and the need to ask for and to extend forgiveness. Or to bring us back to our mushroom imagery, the key feature of those things is that they can only thrive and grow where some level of decay is present. But here's what happens so often, right? We experience this kind of shadow side of life together. And what happens? Our internal siren kind of starts to go off. That something is wrong. That things aren't supposed to be this way. That if we were in proper community, things like this wouldn't happen. But the opposite is true. The fact that laughter and shared joy and kindness and service and all those kind of happy things we think about coexist in the same casserole with careless words and awkwardness and difficult situations is not evidence that something is off or that you need to get something else. It is the very soil in which life is able to grow. And friends, I'm not saying that there's never a time to leave an unhealthy situation. Of course there is. I've been in those situations. I'm saying that our instinct to withhold ourselves or to hit eject on our relationships is activated far too easily in this age. But here's the thing. While organic things do grow messily, they also grow beautifully, wondrously. There's a reason why, despite the great convenience of fake plants, why real ones are better. And we know on some level that they're better. And it is because genuineness has a beauty and a value that cannot be replicated. And when Jesus says, love one another as I have loved you, that's not just something grim. I'm not trying to say that. It's not. It's also a lovely promise because the death of Jesus was not the end of Jesus. He charted a new road for his people that's a paradigm for us in all the ways that we follow him. A road that, yes, leads through death, but leads to resurrection and life, like it can't exist anywhere else. And there's no other road to that resurrection except for death. It is prerequisite to it. And Jesus foreshadows for us here then that this life together might taste like death sometimes, but he assures us in so doing that it's worth it. Because death is not all you'll find in rooting and in loving one another. You will also find life. And the reason that's true is not just because Jesus said it, although that's true. It's true for a deeper reason than that. Do you remember from like the first page in your Bible, all the way back in Genesis, the poetry present there of that creation story is so moving. Because each day that God creates something in there, he ends each of those days by singing over what he's made and saying, it is good. So he separates life from chaos and sings, it is good. And then he speaks light into darkness and he says, this is good. And he creates beasts and trees and birds and fish and flowers and sings, it is good. And he creates a human and says, it is good. But this rhythm of it is good, all comes to this very palpable screeching halt when God sees something and says, it's not good. And what he says is not good, the focal point, is that the human he's created is alone. And that's most frequently cited at weddings and stuff, or to be kind of commentary on kind of the sanctity of marriage. And while it's true that God in that moment did provide a wife for Adam, he did something much more fundamental than that. More ultimately, what God did is he gave his human another human. And the centerpiece of the story of the beginning of all things and our origins is that there is a gap in our being that only other people are able to fill. Even God did not say in that moment, "I'll be enough for him." He needed another person. And the scriptures tell us that it is only in human relationships that this very core part of what it means to be a human slides back into place. So sure, it's true we tend to idealize life together. And, you know, when we picture, relationships in the church, I think our kind of visions are probably pretty similar to one another's, right? We picture, you know, sharing, you know, wine on the back porch or something and deep, rich conversations. And the kids are playing and people are laughing and they're getting along and they're just in authentic relationships where we really know people and we're really known by people and it's beautiful. And the reason why we picture things like that is not because we're naive. It's because we were created for stuff like that. What we have to remember, though, is that that vision that is so beautiful to us all does not come for free. It is the product of time and effort and at times sticking it out. And there will be times when we're perplexed by this. And the invitation of Jesus is to trust the process. Now, this seems as good a time as any for me to address the kind of elephant in the room. Because this is not only our fourth Sunday in this sermon series, this is also my fourth Sunday at this church. Which means you may be wondering, why is he teaching us church values that he himself is like learning with us, right? Or more pointedly, why is the least rooted person in the room teaching us about, you know, rooting among one another? All fair points. But here's why we thought it made sense, after all, in kind of our recognition of the apparent absurdity of it. And it's because I and my family are in real time in the process, in the early critical days of actively putting down roots in this place. And we're not doing that simply because, on one level, it's my job to do that, and you're paying me to do that. We're also doing that because it is fundamental to our humanity to do that. Because we cannot be whole without belonging to and in and with a place among other humans. We have to have it. And might I add, we've moved a lot of places and times, and just by way of encouragement and thanks, it has never gone so happily, smoothly, or quickly as it's gone here. So thank you for that. But I also make no pretense that it's always going to be like that. And that's okay. But the point stands that you have welcomed us into something. Which brings us to our third point, that rootedness is not only counterintuitive and organic, it is, third, fruitful. Jesus goes on to some surprising words after his call for us to love each other. He says, verse 35, "By this all people will know that you're my disciples, if you have love for one another." There's a lot of talk out there about, you know, the means by which, meaningful talk, by the way, I'm not dissing it, but talk about the means by which the church is supposed to reach, you know, the world around it. And we hear lots of things about, you know, leveraging internet presence or, evangelistic strategies or global missions or special groups or initiatives, all of which has its place and is beautiful and wonderful. But Jesus says something really strange here and inserts an odd vein into that discussion. He says that the means by which we present ourselves and Jesus to the world is, and this is curious, not by primary attention on reaching out, but it is in the attention and love within the church that Jesus is put on display by his followers. This is a very upside down way of thinking. I think we really have to trust Jesus that this makes sense, because in my mind, isn't it true that if we think on and focus on and put too much effort onto what's going on internally, that it's going to kind of yield this sort of navel-gazing, insular, clogged pipe kind of church situation? Like, isn't that the product of that? And it can be. Like, I've seen it turn into that. But the idea that Jesus presents to us here is that when rooted communities are marked by love, they become fruitful communities. He uses this imagery just a little later in this same conversation in John 15. He says, we become like vines when we are connected and rooted to Jesus. And he says that those vines bear much fruit. And here's the thing about fruit, it gets eaten by someone. This inner life yields something external that someone comes along and draws nourishment and life from. And Jesus says that that someone is this outside world who's being drawn in by this life. To pick up the pen on my personal story, I'm experiencing this among you in real time. Yeah, I work here and I'm on staff here, but I was a guest here just 4 weeks ago and am still kind of shedding the guest and working into just being here. Like, that's just, it's a process, right? And as I do so, I am being overwhelmingly and warmly welcomed here precisely because something pre-existed me here. It was already here. And I've simply been invited into a life that was already being lived. Your personal initiatives, strong and powerful and touching as they've been, would have a low ceiling to them if they didn't draw from something greater than just yourself. The power of your hospitality has been rooted in the fact that you have a shared life here to invite someone into. That, Jesus says, is how it works. If we believe that this rootedness is fundamental to humanity, and that Jesus offers it like nowhere else can, it means that we are receiving something from him and from one another that every human desperately needs. And to just name something, I think sometimes we can get antsy here as church folk because we think there's a dichotomy here and tend to lean one way or the other. Like maybe we think that what we're here to do is to commune deeply with each other. Or we think that what we're really here to do is to reach the world outside. And for those of us who more naturally think what we're here to do is to commune with each other, we think, well, if we spend too much time reaching, then we're going to lose what we have here among each other. We're going to lose the community. But then folks who maybe think that what we're here to do is reach think that if we're just hanging out all the time, we're going to lose our mission. And we get antsy about that sometimes. And what Jesus does here is he speaks a word into that that dispels all our angst by telling us that there is no dichotomy, that the two are in fact one. that it is by our love for one another that the world will know we are his disciples. And I think the garden imagery is helpful again for us because the best gardeners are always tending to the life that is already there, and they're always planting new seeds. The garden's life is fed, and the garden's life feeds. The garden's life is fed, and the garden's life feeds. So what are we meant to do with all this? How might we tangibly, you know, take a step in putting our roots a little deeper in love? And there are 10,000 answers to that question. But as I thought about what step to encourage, my mind was drawn to this incredible scene in the movie Lady Bird, where this nun asks this extraordinary question of the main character. And she says this, "Don't you think maybe they are the same thing, love and attention?" And in the wake of that movie, I watched it years ago, and that question has rattled around in my head. And if she's right, and I think she is, that love and attention are more the same than we might think, it means that to grow in love and to take a step toward rootedness might be as simple as paying a bit more attention. And so I'll leave you with this. What act of attentiveness might be in front of you, even in this room? Who have you maybe overlooked? What next question might you ask in conversation to pay more attention? Or perhaps you need to somehow receive attention. Maybe to offer up some part of you that you've guarded very closely so that it can receive love and attention. And whatever we do with that, whenever we look at just a next step, it's going to be a small thing, but don't be deceived. There is life and mystery under such things. And this is the last word on mushrooms, I promise. That maybe the craziest thing I've learned about them is that mushrooms are almost never an isolated organism. When you see mushrooms in your yard, even that seem to be far apart, they are almost certainly connected to each other, drawing together off of a shared hidden life that does not belong to any one of them, and yet a life that sustains them all. And as we consider that, I want to turn our attention to the table. This place where Christ continues in his loving ministry to us, where he enters our world week after week, and he enters our stories week after week with his very presence, with his body and his blood, not only for us to remember his sacrifice, but so that he might feed us with his broken body and his shed blood, to feed the shared life that we have among us with his very self. Yes, we remember his sacrifice, but in doing this, we do so much more. We partake of Christ's very life, and we do it together. As we sing, there's going to be kind of two communion stations here. You can make your way forward on either side of the room to partake. If in the wake of the service you feel a further need for a taste of connection and prayer, this room off to your right will have people in it for you to meet and to pray with. I'll pray for us now, and then we'll come to the table. Father, we give you thanks for your salvation, and we marvel that it is so much richer and varied and multifaceted than we would have even expected. That you're not only reconciling us to yourself, but in a mysterious way, Lord, reconciling us to one another. God, we are so convinced of our independence. And I pray, God, that you would bless these friends gathered here with belief in the need that you have called out in each of us here. A need not just for you, but for one another. Father, would you give us vision to see beyond those things that make us so readily turn away from each other and hold out the shared life that really is worth it.